We're doing in Tivot Shalom and Chayei Sarah, and the subject is Sarah's passing. And we're going to skip to the end where he offers another interpretation on Sarah's passing. And he says the following. He says, "Velulei de mistapina, if I wasn't fearful that I'm going out on a limb, I have shalom arad pize, inyan vatam otzora shelachar shera'a satan, ki Avraham Avinu nityaber gam al hanisayon hazeh." We could explain that after the Satan saw that Avram overcame this test as well, he stood up to the test of the binding of his son. So the Satan figured out a new plot. How am I going to make him fall? The Satan knew the time had come for Sarah's passing. וסיבב כך שבהגיע זמנה יבשרו לה שנזדמן בנה לשחיטה וכמעט שלא נשחט ופרחה נשמתה. So the Satan made it that Sarah had to die anyways. This was her year, as Chazal discussed why this was her time of passing and different indications that was it. She was going to die on this day, irrespective of what happened in that Keda. But the Satan saw to it that the last seconds before she passed, she heard the news of the binding. And when she heard that, boom, she died. So what did everyone standing around think? She had a massive heart attack. So that everyone, including Avram, thought that she died because of the Akedah. This was a plan to get Avram Avinu confused and for him to regret what he had done. Because after we do a good deed, one of the first things that happens is something bad. It's very common that you do what's right, and the Satan sees it that something wrong seems to emanate from it, so that you look back and say, gee, I shouldn't have done that. And that's the idea that Chazal say that if someone does something right and then regrets it, so in heaven they say, okay, you regretted it, we'll erase it. And that's one of the challenges we have in life, that we do what's right, and then we feel like, maybe I should regret that. Maybe that was wrong. And I experience it whenever I plan on coming to Israel. I buy the ticket and then something comes up and it's like, okay, I shouldn't have done that. Yeah.
It seems like there's a problem with that idea that you're doing good and then you should not say that it wasn't your intention or you regretted doing it, and so then it's wiped away. You still did the good thing, so it shouldn't be wiped away. That makes it seem like the only reason why you're doing good is because someone's keeping score. Instead of for the intrinsic value of the good deed itself.
I agree. I agree, and I think that we have to look closely as to whether it means it's completely wiped away, because when you measure, when you gauge an action, I think there are numerous ways of gauging it. One of them is what you're saying. Hey, the effect is still here. I did it. You can't ignore that. Even if I would have done it by mistake, the Talmud says, if you drop a coin from your pocket and you did not intend to give the charity, but a poor man picks it up, that's considered your merit. So we see that intent is not the only factor in the performance of a mitzvah. Meaning when a mitzvah is gauged, there are multiple factors. There's the question of what was my intent. There's the question of how much hardship did I have to endure in order to accomplish the mitzvah. And then there's the question of what was the effect. We'll give a small example. When you observe the laws of family purity, so on the surface you feel like the effect is nothing. What difference does it make in the world if I observe the laws or not? But the hardship is huge. In one place the Talmud calls the laws of family purity a light mitzvah. In another place the Talmud calls it a heavy mitzvah. Why? Because the way a person feels, you ask him, what did you accomplish by not touching your wife half a month? I don't know what I accomplished. I accomplished that I observed the mitzvah, but is the world a better place for it? I can't see any difference in the world whether I would have observed the mitzvah or not. So to the human eye, the accomplishment, that's a really light mitzvah. I understand when I don't kill. I understand when I help the poor. So that those are different areas of gauging a mitzvah. And you're right, that in respect to the effect, you can't say, I didn't do anything just because I regretted it. The effects are still there.
Maybe I think that you're saying the whole point of doing mitzvahs and the reason why we have laws and things is just so we can please heaven and not to be kind to each other.
No. So I think
Because that's what the only gauge that seems to be in existence is for how you did it for heaven's sake.
I think the there is such a misconception, and I think that if you analyze the sources closely, I'll give you an example. The sources say the mitzvos are there to make us into better people. Am I a better person if I don't care about my fellow man? I'm only giving charity because God said so. From my perspective, you could drop dead. But God said I should give charity, so I'm giving charity. Is that the type of person the Torah is supposed to train us to be? Or is there an aspect where the Torah is supposed to train you to be a caring person, to care? Meaning, you have a guy who goes to a wedding and says, I'm dancing and smiling to make the chassan happy because it's a mitzvah. Am I happy for him? I'm not happy for him. I don't care. But there's a mitzvah, so I put on a smile. No, so there's that balance where the Torah is supposed to help me become a positive person. And there's also the aspect where when I'm performing a mitzvah, I'm doing what God told me. The two don't have to be mutually exclusive. They could be complementary. And what we're striving for is to have both, where my system is the God-given system, my gauge is the God-given system, but my humanity is developed.
I was trying to draw only to the Jewish source, like, because I know this may have sounded like I was just going over this, I don't know, but I was basing it off of a story that I heard about a rabbi who had heard a voice from heaven for some reason or another. Heaven had taken away his opportunity. He forfeited his chance to enter Gan Eden. And the rabbi immediately began dancing. He said, now I can do good for the sake of doing good instead of hoping for a final reward.
Okay.
So I was bringing up from that.
There's a story like that about the Gra, that the Gra once sent a disciple to buy flour for making matzahs. Something happened with his matzahs or something, and there was only one place he could get flour, and the guy told him, I'll sell you the flour on the condition that I get the merits for the Gra's mitzvah of eating matzah. You know, the Gra, so the Gra was very happy. He said, okay, fine. Right, now I'm doing it because God said so. I'm not doing it for the merits or anything. Right, it's very hard for us to overlook, you know. If someone tells you, do this and I'm going to reward you, and you say, I want to do it for the right reasons. It's hard. But you're right, we do need both. And the right reason is not only because God said so, God wants us to be caring people. You're right.
So when you say it's an equal balance then between doing things for the sake of heaven and doing things for the sake of the world for good? Or would you say that one is there's more emphasis put on doing good for one or the other? Please say something.
I'm trying to answer you from a source.
Heaven
not
speak for you if you don't say so. I think you should have seen this one coming. I'm surprised you didn't ask for yourself.
Which is more important?
Well, I'll answer that because I think that it's clear that doing things for the sake of humanity is the best thing, because God put us here and gave us all these laws. And I thought, who's the one who said that the Torah was made for man, not man for the Torah? Isn't there a
Moshe, Moses? You have to have
it? I'm not sure if it was Moses, but I believe there's a source that backs that up. I didn't come up with that. No, it's you have to live by the mitzvah, right? It's these laws are given to us to live by, not to die by. There's a lot of hints to it, and I think it even says it straight out in some source. I'm not sure where.
So, I don't know of a source offhand. I have to think. Pertaining to a Jew, when it pertains to a Noahide, so there in Maimonides, Maimonides discusses with regards to a Noahide, what happens if you have a Noahide that says, I don't believe in God, but I'm going to keep the seven Noahide laws. Meaning I'll keep some nohad laws, but I haven't come to the conclusion that the God of Israel is the right God. I've come to the conclusion I'm going to keep the seven Ohad laws.
Well, including to the religious group, he would be deluding himself. He would be unintentionally following God's commandments, even if he denied it.
So we have two versions in Maimonides. We're not sure what Maimonides wrote about such a Gentile. We're not sure when Maimonides says that. So according to one edition of Maimonides' works, he says he's not the greatest, but he's kosher. And according to another version in Maimonides' works, Maimonides says he's an exceptional human being. He's like, Maimonides compliments him. We're not sure what Maimonides wrote about such a person, meaning he definitely wrote he's okay. The question is, this might be an answer to your question, saying he doesn't do it for God's sake, he does it for the truth's sake or humanity's sake. And the question is, what does Maimonides say about that? Now, I'm not sure if we can infer from that to a Jew or not. I have to think about it some more. You're saying between the two, which is more important? Which is more important? I'll tell you, it's a little bit of a tricky question. Yeah.
I'm wondering now if this is something that people, it goes through their mind, like, okay, should I put more emphasis on doing God? Is that like someone gets hit by a car? Any situation, you immediately start weighing the balances in your mind. These quick moments, what do you think of? Should I impress God or should I impress this? There's a story like in the Christian, this just came to my mind, so I have to, of the sick man who's laying on the right. Now, it's a terrible story, but it demonstrates what I'm trying to say. So there's a sick man there, and a Pharisee passes by, and another man passes by, and they say it's the Sabbath, I can't work, bring my horses out to work on the Sabbath to help this sick, dying man here in the road. Because heaven commanded I keep the Sabbath. And then they keep walking by, and then it's someone who is not religious at all, a Samaritan in this version. You heard the Good Samaritan, that's the story. That's the whole idea. It was because they were so intent on honoring heaven that they were not even, it far outweighed their basic human, what made them human, taking care of another person just for the sake of doing good and, instead of caring about an impressive guy keeping score in heaven, take care of all your brothers and sisters right here.
So the Talmud gives us stories like that, but I'm not sure that proves anything. Meaning the Talmud tells us a story of a kohen who stabbed another kohen to death, and the kohen who was stabbed was lying on the floor wounded, and the other kohanim, the father of the kohen came and pulled out the dagger before the kid died and said, "Look, great, I didn't defile this object of the temple." And when the chief rabbi came to the scene, he said, "I think we have to bring out all the vessels in eulogy because you guys got it all wrong. This is a destruction of the temple. If you're thinking of God and you're not thinking of the man on the floor, you're thinking about defilement and you're not thinking of the man on the floor." There's a story about a Roman who was shipwrecked and people started mocking him. "What's the Roman worth? Look at him. He's standing there naked." And everyone was just laughing. And one of the rabbis came along and said, "What's wrong with you guys? There's a human being there who has no clothing. Help him out." And he quickly came and clothed the person and took care of him and sent him on his way. And years later, there was a decree against the Jewish people. And this rabbi was sent to beg the Roman Empire to annul the decree. And when he walked in, the emperor said, "Okay, because you came, I'll annul the decree. You remember me?" So he looked at him and said, "No, who are you?" He said, "I was that man shipwrecked. You were the only Jew who actually gave me clothing. The other people just mocked me." The Talmud gives us many stories to illustrate the idea you're saying about valuing humanity as humanity. We have a Mishnah that says that. But that still doesn't answer the question in the balance when I'm performing a mitzvah, meaning I'm supposed to be a compassionate person. That's a biblical mitzvah, to be a rachum, to be a merciful person, to be a caring person. That's a biblical mitzvah. That's true. When I do an act of kindness, I'm doing it because I'm supposed to be a merciful person and also because God commanded me to. I have a mitzvah to clothe the naked. A person needs clothing, I have a mitzvah to give him clothing. Now, am I doing it because God said so or because I'm a merciful person? Well, I should be doing it because of both. Now, you're asking which one should have greater weight? What should be more? So that's a good question. I mean, the more merciful you are, then the more you're performing that mitzvah of being a merciful person. Does the Torah tell you within those two which one should should rain more? I'm not sure. I have to think about it. I don't know. I mean, the act you're supposed to do, and to be a merciful person, you're supposed to be. But again, you're going to be a merciful person within the guidelines of the Torah. Meaning, there are scenarios where you would much rather do one way, and the Torah tells you to do another way. We face those scenarios all the time. So then our system is Torah-based. But that doesn't answer your question either. You understand what I'm saying?
Doesn't answer my question about... Well, first of all, we have to come back to the discussion of what we were talking about, how that we come some ways. Can you go back to the text that we started?
Here?
We asked the first question, yeah.
We were talking about Sarah and Avram Avinu seeing that Sarah passed away as a result of what it seemed to him because of the Akedah, and Avram's contending with that so that he wouldn't regret what he had done earlier. That was the test. Would he regret what he did right? And we said that if one regrets what they did right, so then that could cause it to be erased in heaven. And you said, well, wait a second, what about the impact of what you did and the value of having done something right? It's interesting to note that here he didn't do anything on the surface that affected humanity. On the surface, he did a mitzvah totally for the sake of God. On the contrary, his human feelings did get in his way.
Wasn't totally for the sake of God, because we're told in the text that the reason why God told him to do it was for the sake of Abraham.
That's true.
So in a way, he was doing it all for himself.
That's true, in a way. In a way, everything we do right, we're doing for ourselves.
Yeah, but isn't that very selfish of us? I mean, shouldn't we only be concerned about what would make heaven happen?
We're a physical being. I mean, what do you want? It's uncreated like that.
But we're endowed with the Spirit of God.
We wouldn't be humans if that was... I mean, we're humans.
No one's saying that Avram thought he's doing it for himself. No, it doesn't say Avram's focus was for himself. On the contrary, Avram prayed not to do it. We are given the perspective in the Torah that when Avram had to contend with this test and did, then Avram was a greater person for it. But when Avram was doing it, it's like any test. I don't think Avram was thinking, oh, this is great.
But isn't that what because he knew that God had said that he was going to take Isaac and make him a great nation, and that was, he knew obviously that he wasn't going to go through with it.
No,
test.
So that's not our tradition. Our tradition is that Avram did not have an answer. On the contrary, Avram prayed before he went up. Avram prayed when he did go up. And Avram kept thinking, I don't understand. Didn't he promise things would play themselves out differently? And now he's contradicting himself, and he did not have an answer to that question. It's not that he assumed, oh, it's going to be okay. It's that he said, I don't know what God wants now. Didn't he tell me one way? And don't forget that Avram also knew that maybe he didn't live up to his end of the deal. And maybe God is now taking it out on him. He had no guarantee that that promise would come true. That promise might have had a condition that Avram live up to his end of the deal. And we also have, among the sages, different reasons that our sages say that Avram deserved to have that pain of going through that grueling test of 3 days thinking he's losing his son.
Didn't he say on the way up that God would provide a lamb?
He did say that, and our tradition is that what he was saying was either a lamb or you. Because he does end the sentence with saying, you, my son. And he said, God will provide the lamb, my son. And the question is how you punctuate that sentence.
Doesn't the Torah punctuate the sentence, and every punctuation is divinely not inspired, but divinely written?
Right, and the Torah punctuates it with a comma there. And so our tradition is that punctuation indicates that he was telling Isaac, either a lamb or my son. We're going to see. If no lamb shows up, then what he seemed to have told me is it's you. You see, Avram did entertain the thought it could play itself out differently, and he did pray for it, and Isaac also prayed for it. So they weren't happily going forward and saying, let's just slaughter my son, one more great step in the service of God. No. They were saying, I'm happy to do it if that's his will, and I'm going to pray for him to change his will. They were both praying. We say it on every fast day. We say, Mi she'anat Avram Avinu b'Har HaMoriah, u'yanenu. whoever answered Abraham on Mount Moriah should answer us. So that means we're understanding that Abraham prayed for this outcome and his prayers were answered. In other words, it wasn't a given, and that's a prayer that we've been saying since the days of Rabbi Akiva. 2,000 years now. Coming back to the Netivot Shalom after a long loop. But the truth is, says the Netivot Shalom, Shelo nistalka b'emtza yameh. She didn't pass away in the middle of her days. Ki az b'diyuk nishlemu yameh chayah. That was exactly the point where she was destined to die. Ve'gezman alamut. Her time had come to pass. And that's why the Torah makes a point in our parsha of telling you the number of years she lived. Her days were counted. And our sages are telling you that was her life, meaning that's what she was predestined to live. And that's why the Torah reiterates and says, this was the years of the life of Sarah. To tell you that this was the plan all along. She wasn't meant to live a minute more than this. And as our sages point out in the Medrash on Parshas Noach, before Sarah's sun set, Rebecca's sun already rose. Meaning, it was pre-planned. Our sages tell us part of the planning of the world is that sunrise, sunset, before the sun of one giant sets, the sun of another giant is rising. And the reason the stories were juxtaposed, Sarah's passing and the binding of Yitzchak, and the Satan made it so that it would seem like that's why she passed away. And Avram stood up to this test as well. And that's why the Torah describes that when Avram came to eulogize Sarah and weep over her, it says there was in our Sifrei Torah, our tradition is, that the chaf of livkota, to weep over her, is a small chaf, to tell us that Avram didn't view it as though Sarah passed away at a young age. Oh, poor Sarah, she could have lived longer. Look what I did to her. To tell us that his weeping was a minimized weeping because he viewed it with the correct perspective. He said she lived to a ripe old age. And this is, I guess, the time she had to pass. And that means he stood up to this test because he understood, okay, this isn't the punishment. I didn't do what was wrong. And guys, this is one of the challenges in life. That when we do something right, we sometimes look back and say, wait a second, maybe I did wrong. You're going to find when you make the right decisions in life, suddenly you're going to be faced with difficulty that makes you stop and say, wait a second. There's a saying in English, they say, no good deed should go unpunished. We sometimes find ourselves living in a world where I did what was right and it seems like only bad things came from it. Look at Joseph. He stands up to the test with his master's wife and what happens? He's imprisoned and everyone's talking about him. What a bum. Look at Avram, he stands up to the test of the Akedah and his wife drops dead. So we have to be prepared for that. And the Torah here is teaching us, I'm summarizing what he says, that there's what's called the Satan that precedes and the Satan that comes afterwards. There are those tests that get in our way before we do something right, and then there are those tests that come afterwards. And sometimes those tests are not less than the test that stood in the way of performing a mitzvah. They're even greater. That you think you got it right. And then you start looking back and say, oh boy, look at what happened when I did what was right. And guys, the older you get, the greater that test becomes. The more pivotal the decisions you make, the more you're going to stand there and look back and say, wait a second, I thought I did it right. I thought I made the right calculations. And then you sit down and you start looking it over and you say, I still think I got it right. But the outcome doesn't seem to justify it. And the idea here is that we're facing that test. Are you going to regret what you did right? And that's what the Torah is teaching us in our parsha, that Avram was put to the test. Is he going to regret what he did right? And he stood up to it. And that's teaching us a lesson. And that's, we can explain based on this what the verse says in Psalms. The verse says, Matzil ani mechazak mimenu, God saves the poor from those that are more powerful than them. The ani ve'evyon migozlo, and the poor and impoverished from he who tries to steal from them. So the Talmud tells us in Nidorim that the word ani, one who is poor, the Talmud says, ein ani ela bedat. There is no poverty other than poverty of knowledge, of intellect. Poverty is only poverty of intellect. So Hashem saves a person from the poor, from that which is stronger than them, that's the Yetzer Hara. Our sages say our desire to do evil is more powerful than us. And God gives us strength every day to overcome him, but really our desires are more powerful than we are. And then the verse says, and Hashem saves the poor and impoverished from he who wants to steal from them. That's the idea that after you stood up to your desires, you did what was right, and then the Yetzer Hara comes back and hits you in an underhanded way. So Hashem gives you strength to stand up to that test as well when they try to take that away from you. And this is one of the challenges. I could tell you that this is one of the, to my mind, one of the greater challenges in life, because this is the challenge that knocks the wind out of you. Sometimes a person can feel, great, I stood up to that challenge, I did it, I made it. And then he sees the outcome of what he did right. I have a friend who went to great pains to arrange certain medication to be brought into the state of Israel. And he worked really hard to get that medication approved and get it in here. And after he brought it in, so he brought a very limited amount, the amount that could save two lives, and suddenly he gets word that the medication was used on two Palestinians. So he's standing there after all the work he did, and the wind's knocked out of him. What did I do? He says to himself, are they going to be suicide bombers? Like, who did I just say? What was I fighting for? Went through a lot of red tape, spent 2 months, a lot of hassle to get that medication into the country. And then, now, we don't know who it was used for. Or like I said to him, firstly, the act he did was good. I wanted, and the state wouldn't approve this, I wanted him to write a letter to the recipients of the medication, where he tells them, look, I worked on behalf of humanity. I want you to know that a Jew saved your lives. Maybe it'll impact them. Who knows? At least, you know, if he did it, they should know it. I want you to know I worked very hard, and I wish you well. The state wouldn't do it. There's some law that you can't have contact. If you worked on donating medical stuff, then they're not going to let you have contact with the recipient. Something about keeping the anonymity. I said, okay, so make it an anonymous letter. He'll write his name. He doesn't have to know who you give it to. They weren't so interested in being accommodating. But I said to him, maybe you saved the lives of good people. We don't know. And there were definitely Jews on the waiting list for that medication, and now they're two notches higher. So you did do good. You did good. But you can understand the guy. I spent he got the medication in on a Friday afternoon, mamash, like an hour before Shabbos. And then to make matters worse, Shabbos was desecrated in order to get that medication out to the hospital where they needed it. So he really felt like 2 cents. I said to him, you did what was right. Don't let this knock the wind out of you. You did what was right. And you stand next to the guy, we dined together Friday night, and he had no smile on his face that Shabbos. Sometimes we do everything right, and then the test that comes afterwards knocks the wind out of us. And that's when we have to stand up and say, wait a second, no, I did right. And that takes sometimes much more koach, much more strength than standing up to the test in the first place.